Good afternoon. I'd like to call this meeting of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee to order at 1:41 p.m. We are in Belts Room 105, the Thomas Stewart Building, in the nation's most beautiful capital city of Juneau, Alaska. Today is Monday, April 22nd, 2024. Members present are Senator Gray Jackson, Senator Dunbar, and myself, Senator Bjorkman. Senators Bishop and Merrick are in Senate Finance. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Please turn off or silence your cell phones. I would like to recognize and welcome our recording secretary, Lisa Denny, and our LIO moderator, Joseph Giesbrecht. Thank you, everyone, for being here today, and welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce. Today, we have three items on our agenda. First is House Bill 273 from AHFC, making purchasing mortgage loans. Then we'll follow that up with Senate Bill 146, gaming electronic pull tabs, and we'll round out today's hearing with House Bill 253, federally designated refrigerants. Senate Bill 257, electric utility regulation, has been postponed from our agenda today while we await the arrival of a committee substitute. We'll take that bill up at the next hearing as soon as we have that substitute in hand. First up today is House Bill 273 from the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. Today, we are hearing this companion bill to Senate Bill 191, which was previously heard on February 7th. It is my intention today to have a recap of House Bill 273 and look to the will of the committee. With us today from the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation is Stacy Barnes, here to present the bill. Ms. Barnes. Welcome. Please put yourself on the record. We're thankful to have you here with us at Senate Labor and Commerce.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Thank you very much for having me and taking the opportunity to hear House Bill 273. For the record, my name is Stacy Barnes. I'm the Director of Governmental Relations and Public Affairs at Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. As you mentioned, the companion to this bill, Senate Bill 191, was heard in this committee on February the 7th, and we're enthusiastic about bringing the bill to you again today, as we really believe that this is an effort to allow for more Alaskans to choose AHFC for their home loan by making home ownership more accessible to them in regards to down payment assistance. In the Kenai, for example, the average sales price of a home last year was $375,000. In Anchorage, it was $481,000. That means that an Alaskan choosing an AHFC home loan would need a down payment, of almost $19,000 in Kenai and $24,000 in Anchorage. If AHFC had the latitude to adjust the loan-to-value ratio that's currently in statute, and we would move from a 95% loan-to-value to a 97% loan-to-value, that would drop the amount of the down payment that's required in Kenai to about $7,100 and in Anchorage to $9,600, while also providing minimal changes to the monthly payment that the homeowner would pay. In Anchorage, it would be about $61 per month, and in Kenai, it would be $47 a month based on an interest rate of 6.5% for a 30-year home loan. This bill has had one change since you saw it last in the committee, and that was the addition of an immediate effective date. We further clarified, Mr. Chairman, that condos are eligible entities as single-family properties, and so they would be able to benefit from this change in the legislation. If you have any questions, I'm certainly happy to answer them. We also have our CEO and Executive Director, Brian Butcher, who is on the phone today, as is our Director of Mortgage, Michelle Graves. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Ms. Barnes. Are there any questions from members of the committee?
Very briefly.
Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The change regarding condos, you said that was a clarifying amendment because they actually weren't eligible before.
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, it was actually a question that was posed in committee, and we clarified that condos do fit within the definition of the bill as it's presented. So there were no amendments and no changes to it. I just wanted to be responsive to the committee and make sure that we had it on the record that condos do qualify for this benefit.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
further questions?
Not a question, Mr. Chairman, but thank you, Mr. Chairman. But I think that that was a question that I had. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome. Thank you. Seeing and hearing no further questions, at this time I will open up public testimony on House Bill 273. Is there anyone in the room wishing to testify to this piece of legislation? Is there anyone online who would like to testify? Seeing and hearing none, I will close public testimony on House Bill 273. Are there any further questions for the bill sponsors or committee discussion?
Ready? Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I move to report House Bill 273, version 33, G, sugar, 2318/B, like Bob, from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Take a brief at ease. Back on the record at 147. Senator Ray Jackson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to restate my motion. I move to report House Bill 273, version 33, G, H like Harry, 2318/B like Bob, from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Very good. Is there any objection? Seeing and hearing none, House Bill 273, version /B, is reported from committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note. We'll take a brief at ease while we sign the report and set up for our next bill. Thank you. back on the record. It is 1:52 here in the Thomas Stewart Building, Belts Room 105. Next up, we are going to take up Senate Bill 146, Gaming Electronic Pull Tabs. Our first hearing on this bill was March 13th when we heard a presentation of the bill from Commissioner Crum with the Department of Revenue. Today, it is my intention to hear invited in public testimony after we bring forward a CS for the committee to discuss and talk about and continue with our discussion about the merits of this piece of legislation. Today with us, we have Michael Williams, the Deputy Director from the Department of Revenue at the Tax Division, for a brief recap of the bill. Deputy Director Williams, are you with us?
Yes, Chair Boltman. This is Michael Williams, Acting Deputy Director, Tax Division.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. Could you give us a brief recap for the of the bill?
Certainly. The bill, as Chair Bjorkman and members of the committee, again, for the record, my name is Michael Williams, Acting Deputy Tax Director, Alaska Department of Revenue. The bill, as it is currently written, is a bill that would allow pull tab games to be expanded from traditional paper pull tabs to include electronic pull tabs or e-tabs. Current statute defines pull tab game as a game of chance where a card, the face of which is covered to conceal a number, symbol, or set of symbols, is purchased by the participant and where a prize is awarded for a card containing certain numbers or symbols designated in advance and at random. The language of this bill would expand to include electronic pull tab systems under a new provision of Alaska Statute 05.15.690. This bill also increases the prize limits for permittees who contract with an operator from a maximum of $500,000 in prizes each year to a maximum of $2 million in prizes each year for electronic pull tab activities and a maximum of $1 million in prizes each year from other gaming activities. This bill provides some unique limitations for electronic pull tab systems that the paper pull tab games do not have, such as a series may not exceed 15,000 tickets, a vendor may not have more than 5 electronic pull tab devices on premises, an operator may not have more than 10 electronic pull tab devices on premises. Note, there is no limit for the number of electronic pull tab devices for permittees. The department would need to establish regulations to ensure quality and data security of the devices used for electronic pull tabs, and regulation completion and timing will be determined based on passage of the legislation. The revenue impacts of the bill cannot be determined due to a lack of knowledge about how this legislation may change the amount and volume of gaming activity. It is possible that adding electronic pull tab systems to the gaming portfolio could either increase overall gaming activity or just switch activity from existing paper pull tabs to these new electronic pull tab games. The state revenues from pull tabs consist of these sources. There's a 3% pull tab tax on gross receipts less the payout or the prizes per pull tab game. Then there's the license fee of $2,500 per year for the pull tab manufacturer, a $1,000 per year license fee for the pull tab distributor, and a pull tab vendor permit fee of $50 per year per location, and then net proceeds fee of 1% of net proceeds from a permit fee if gross receipts are greater than $20,000 for all gaming. State revenue impacts of the pull tab taxes averaged about $2 million per year. For the past 4 years, total state revenue from gaming was $3 million for FY22. If there is any incremental state revenues, the amounts are not significant. And as far as implementation costs, the cost and impacts of this bill are indeterminate at this time until further study and work with electronic pull tab vendors can occur to better understand how adding this game will impact both the current programming and personnel resources. A charitable gaming program uses the current tax revenue management system, so the department is uncertain at this time if we would need to create additional interfaces between these new electronic pull tab systems and trends. The department is unsure if this will require additional personnel. with that, if there's any questions from Board Department of Revenue, happy to respond to those.
Thank you very much, Acting Deputy Director Williams. Senator Gray Jackson has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a couple of questions. And the first one, and thank you for your presentation. Why is the maximum payout for electronic poll tabs proposed at $2 million while existing permittees are raised from $500,000 to only $1 million? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Through the chair, Senator Gray Jackson, that's the decision, that's a policy decision that is part of the bill. I don't have an answer otherwise for that.
Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Okay, I have another question. So how will the electronic poll tabs affect each of the charitable gaming types? For example, the self-directed vendor, multi-beneficiary committee, or operator? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Through the chair to Senator Gray Jackson, that is likely a question for industry representatives. The department is, the revenue that impacts the Department of Revenue will remain largely the same as far as the amount of gaming that continues to come in. So, for example, I know there's been a question out there, how much additional gaming does it require to reach $1 million in additional tax revenue to the state? And that means roughly $535 million of additional gaming activity. That does not necessarily mean additional gaming money coming from elsewhere. It could just be continual churning of prize money through the system that could also generate that additional revenue to the state. And that's based on the 3% of gross receipts after prizes are paid out. To the rest of your question, I would defer to members of industry who might be able to better answer that on the impact to vendors and distributors and individual permittees.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Are there other questions for Acting Deputy Director Williams? Seeing and hearing none, Mr. Williams, if you could stay on the line, we may have questions for you later.
Certainly, Chair Bjorkman.
Senator Gray Jackson, may I have a motion to adopt the CS, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the committee adopt CS for Senate Bill 146, version 33, G, sugar 1054, /sugar, as the working document. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I'll object for purposes of discussion. With us today to speak to the changes made by this committee substitute, we have Matt Fisher. Mr. Fisher, welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce. If you could put yourself on the record and begin your presentation.
Good afternoon. My name is Matt Fisher. I am co-owner of Alaska Wholesale, along with my wife, Amber Fisher. I appreciate the opportunity to testify today here. I apologize if I get the formalities wrong. This is not my normal line of business. We're usually busy doing the poll tab stuff. A little bit about us and our qualifications here. Alaska Wholesale Distributors was started under my dad over 30 years ago. Excuse me. He was a former state senator. He was here between 82 and 92, and he generated some of the gaming bills. And when he got out of the legislature, his goal was to ensure that nonprofits had a supply of low-cost games, ensuring that they were actually able to get the money and wanted to make sure that big business did not overtake it. After his death, we restructured the company just as Alaska Wholesale LLC, just as part of the whole, when your dad dies, a little easier to run things. Lifelong Alaskan, is born in Soldotna, still live there today. Our business is still on the same property that I grew up on. We serve the entire state of Alaska. We are one of three distributors that are left in Alaska. That's quite a bit less than there used to be. We are the smallest of the three, but we like what we do. Very different perspective than some of the other owners. since I am day-to-day operations of the business, I am seeing the customers in the pull-tab stores. We're seeing the permittees, operators, and the manufacturers, so we get all their perspectives. Alaska gaming is very unique than other states. The way we're set up is very much trying to get the nonprofits as much money as possible, and that is our ultimate goal. Anything we change in regulation should be to that point. How do we get more money into the pockets of the nonprofits? Not the distributors, manufacturers, or operators, but money into the permittees. Now, we need all those different elements to get more money into the hands of the permittees. Listening to the discussion all throughout the different hearings, and some of the questions were simple for us to know the answers to, but seemed very difficult for some of the other people to answer because they're not in all elements. If you take a look at this, there's several different ways that nonprofits can run in Alaska: a gaming permit, self-directed permits, multi-beneficiary operator, or vendor. Three of the four need to worry about their pull tab ticket price. The bars do not. The reason for that is bars get 30% of the profit of a game, no matter the cost of a game. I'll give you an example. I had a lady call me up. It's been a few months ago now. She bought a coin board game that the cost was higher. She actually had to pay a vendor to take that game because there was not enough room between the game cost and what the profit was. The bar is guaranteed 30% of the profit. Okay, that's how they buy the game. So a whole lot different. So if we hear testimony from a bar owner, we love the guys, but they don't see the ticket cost as elevated all throughout the years. They are sheltered from that. The nonprofit alone has to absorb that. I want to say back in November, Senator Bjorkman contacted me, asked what I thought about the gaming bill, and my answer was real quick: absolutely not. E-tabs are terrible for the state. And that's the language that I've gone on based on my dad. We had some preconceived notions. One of them was that you can go through your money too fast. You can just keep click, 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 click as fast as you can, and money goes away. Don't want that. I do not want people to go broke on pull tabs. The other was I got a few bills, increases from manufacturers that had more increases in prices. The price just keeps going up, and I'm realizing my customers can't afford it. So we did some research. We found out there's some other companies out there that have a little different rates. My dad always taught me, if there's a problem, don't complain about it. Find a solution to it. Today, we're here looking at what that solution is. Started talking with different charities around the state, operators, nonprofits, and seeing, okay, here's a group of Alaskans. What can we do? Every time I heard Arrow talking about this, I'm just thinking of the old, if you remember the salsa commercial, this is made in New York City. That's not the way salsa should be made. Alaska gaming shouldn't be made in Cleveland. It should be made in Alaska. We should be deciding what we want for Alaskans and what's best for the Alaska population. We took a look at some different companies around the country. We found Pilot Gaming out of Minnesota. We do not hear as a lobbyist for Pilot. We do have signed on as a distributor for them, but we're not representing them. We are ourselves. Shows a little bit. We can look at Minnesota as one of the best places for electronic pull tabs. Pilot has 1,643 locations in Minnesota. Pollard's the next closest, 662, and then Arrow has 53 locations. Pilot knows what they're talking about. We talked with them about the what do they see happening in Minnesota? What would they like to see as Alaska's developed? What do we need to protect the nonprofits? What were the shortcomings? They do have shortcomings there. Met with the operators, vendors throughout the state. One of the things that's exceptional about Pilot, and we've established this right away, there's no lack of transparency. Our rate will be 31% profit sharing with operators. It will be 33% for permittees. It's been 31% in North Dakota or Minnesota for about 14 years. It's never changed. Shouldn't have to be a question of what your rate is. If your product is good, you can put a price tag on it, and that's what it is. Key points from Alaska Industries we're talking. Number one, they are concerned about a monopoly in Alaska. That is their number one concern. Before anything else happens, they want to see that addressed. They're worried about the cost of e-tabs, profits going out of state, worried about bars looking like casinos, putting pull tab stores and bingo halls out of business. Bars are really worried about tips declining with e-tabs. Like my dad, they were concerned about playing being too fast. And I can just share with you this real quick. It's not in my presentation later. E-tabs are slower than paper. Designed intentionally to make the entertainment time last longer. A $300 payout the other day, I was playing it on autoplay, and it took a couple minutes for that payout to actually happen. It's not one click, and it shows you won $300. They draw it out. And that's intentional. We want people to stay longer. We don't want to just take their money away. It's an entertainment. They insist rules are put in statute and not put off until regulation time. That's why this bill is quite more comprehensive than was produced by Arrow. We want to see it in writing. We want the legislature to be the ones directing it, not the people that are going to be designing the regulations. Trying to clean things up. There's a lot of things in the current gaming statutes that are not even used. If you call Marty up, she'll say, yeah, that's we don't do that. Looking at payroll, we have no idea why operators are submitting their payroll to the gaming commission. So a lot of things they're frustrated with. Why do we even do this? They're frustrated with why the bill was written by out-of-state interest. And this next one's a huge one. They're concerned the store sales information acquired through point-of-sale systems will be used, shared with other stores. There are two major point-of-sale systems in Alaska. This is every bar, every pull-tab store, every operator uses these, puts all their game information in. They put my prices in that I sell them the games. Arrow has bought both of the major point-of-sale systems, not just one. They bought both. Very concerning that they also bought the Whaler, so they have access to all my prices and all my customers, what they sell at each store. We believe that's extremely problematic, and that's not lost on any of our customers. There is a third one out there that's very small. Worried manufacturers will become operators and affect self-serve e-tab centers in malls. A lot of your questions asked about what will it look like, Minnesota versus Alaska. We use Minnesota because we kind of look at them as the best example of e-tabs happening. On the period of 2012 to 2021, their pull-tab sales went up 155%. Alaska went up 36%. We take inflation in, that's pretty stagnant. Not a great deal of growth. A lot of places are concerned, especially bars, what will happen to paper pull-tab sales if we allow electronics. The orange on this is electronic pull-tabs, and the blue is paper. You'll notice not much of a decline. 2023 did decline, and I'm going to suspect that's because paper pull tabs are just getting too expensive, that people are starting to cut back a little bit more. I used to be able to sell a paper pull tab for 2 cents a piece. I get them for more than that now. We're up more around 5 or 6 cents a piece, and that was pre-COVID, so we're not talking a long time ago. We're talking, well, what's COVID now, 4 years ago? It's kind of flying by here. The entertainment value, you heard the person that was on the online there. I'm sorry, I want to – things I have a really hard time with name recall. 2:10 p.m. He spoke about the number of – how much revenue it would take. When you switch from an 80% paper pull tab to a 90% pull tab, you are clicking. If you want to spend $100, mathematically, that's 490 clicks or rips of a piece of paper because you go down 10% each time, 20% per paper. It's 990 clicks by the time you run to zero. So if you started at 100, you're going to play one, you're going to lose 10 cents. You're going to lose 10 cents. It's a lot of time to lose $100. Okay, now that's mathematically, so obviously it's not always going to be that steady, but if you played 1,000, it's going to be there. It's designed to be an entertainment experience. There's those that are concerned about this being an addiction. You have far better ways to spend your money gambling. You have in your pocket a phone that has access to real gambling sites within minutes. We don't see this being any more a problem with addiction. Paper costs have gone up steadily, and I apologize, I know I'm talking really fast. There's just so much information here. Our customers' best success is when they play games 85 to 90%. Players like to be successful. My best analogy of this is when you go out fishing, you can only get skunked so many days before you just hang it up. Doesn't even matter if you get a small fish. It creates that little bit of excitement, and you keep fishing, and you keep going. Electronic pull tabs allow us to go to that higher percentage because we don't have the paper costs. With our company, it's not a per ticket cost, it's a percentage, so that makes it a lot easier on them. Bingo halls, if you hear them, they can get by with a lower percentage because they bring players in to play bingo and then they play pull tabs. Pull tab shops have to bring customers in just for playing pull tabs, so they need to have a higher percentage. I don't like to use the analogy to casinos, but casinos are in there to make money. Their slot machines are 96% and above because they want to make money for profit. Okay, so when we're talking percentages, we know higher percentages get players to engage more and earn more money from nonprofits.
Matt, I'm going to stop you right there.
Sure.
For your presentation so far. Could you remind the committee and the public, when you talk about these percentages, specifically on the previous slide, 85 to 90%, percent of what?
Sure. So if you play $100, the nonprofit is going to essentially give you back $85 or $90. A higher percentage means you win more often. So that's a given in pull tabs. That's one of the things very different than other type of gaming is it's a fixed number. It'll never vary. That one box of pull tabs will always do that. You will always lose between 10 and 20% of your money. Donation to your nonprofit, you will lose. Hate to be the bearer of bad news, but at least you get to play and donate to somebody of quality. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
So a lot of our customers, one came to us last week, said, hey, do you have this game in a lower payout percentage? It looks the identical thing, but has a lower payout. It kind of tricks the customers. And I know what's happening. They said, our board said we're not making enough money with our ticket costs higher. We want to lower our game percentages. What's going to happen? They're going to play a lower percentage game. Players are unhappy because they're not winning enough. They lose players. So what happens? The board says we're not making enough money. Lower your percentages. They lower them again. And the next thing you know, they closed up shop because they're not making any money. No players are in there. People are saying e-tabs are more expensive than paper. Here's a comparison. We can manipulate numbers a bit. If we use low payout percentages, absolutely use paper. They're cheaper. When we get to 85% payout, it equals out. Okay, what I mean by that is a 5-cent ticket, if you're paying by the ticket, a paper ticket, a 5-cent ticket is 5 cents. If it's 90, I'm eating up, if 90% payout, meaning I'm going to take half your profit as a distributor because I'm charging 5 cents. If we go down to 80%, I'm still only taking 5 cents. That leaves you 15 cents. I'm taking a third of your profit. Okay. With electronics, we take one third no matter what. So as you get to the higher percentages, it's more beneficial to the nonprofit to have a profit sharing basis versus a per ticket price. One of the things that scares us as an industry, I think we've all been suckered by this before. You buy Dish Network at that great deal the first year, then you get to see the price tag the second year. You don't like it. You're stuck in a contract. It's one of the things that's scaring the industry right now. Are we going to see a bait and switch? Somebody comes along and promises us the great thing, and then it's gone. One of the things in this bill is we're not allowed to do contracts for longer than 1 month. Your product should speak for itself. There's no kickbacks allowed. Your product should speak for itself. You should not have to pay somebody to use your product. That doesn't make sense. It should be a good enough product that they pay for it, and that's the end of it. Supply chain. Manufacturers have been bought up by equity firms, creating less options. This is huge. The supply chain is so screwed up right now, and then we have it narrowed even more by the manufacturers. Alaska right now is supplied by 4 manufacturers. Some manufacturers put themselves in a spot. They can create a monopoly. We are really close to that. This is what it looks like in Alaska. We have Platinum Equity owns everything, as I look at my screen on the left-hand side here. They have bought up multiple manufacturers over the year. They bought up both point-of-sale systems that are major point-of-sale systems for Alaska. They have bought a distributor. Here's a fear of mine as a distributor as I speak today, and this has happened before. Do they go to my main manufacturer, Bonanza Press, and they are distributors down south for very large companies? Do they say, if you don't stop selling to Fisher, we're going to stop buying your product? It's happened. That company has done it before. The This is not a threat. That is an empty threat. All the industries are worried about this. Is our product going to be limited? If you don't use our electronic games, this is a hypothetical, if you don't use our e-tabs, we're not going to allow you to have our paper products. This is a very real reality. Other manufacturers out there, Douglas Press, I think my orders are between 4 and 6 months out with them. They do produce for Alaska, very limited product. International Game Co., they are also owned by an equity company, American Games. They are producing very little for Alaska. You get about 4 games a month out of them, and it's only what they have. They're focusing on their southern markets. Bonanza Press, they're fully supporting Alaska distributors. They're a Washington company that we've been able to depend on. Manufacturers buying their own distributors, a new trend kind of since COVID. We haven't seen this before that. And I should say, we haven't seen it on a large scale like we have now. It may have happened somewhere that we don't know about. In the last hearing, Errol questioned why Alaskans are viewing them as the big bad wolf. They are the big bad wolf. I spoke to you earlier about my dad being in the pull tab business. And when it came, he was fighting cancer, had his distributorship for 20 years. And another distributor said, hey, stop selling to Fisher. He's selling to another distributor in his competition. They stopped the supply. His customers that have had that product for 20 years, half of his, what he would sell, was cut off. It's illegal. But who can fight that? The answer in response when he finally got a hold of somebody was, we have more attorneys than you do. And it's true. So you're left with no repercussions, no recourse. This is kind of as my dad was dying his last year of life. He left me 3 binders, and I wish he was here today. This is copies. They're all yellow, all saying the same thing. All dealing with not understanding after 20 years of dealing with the company as they bought up other companies. Why would they shut him off and his not understanding? It's from the attorneys saying, you're right, Fisher. They're not allowed to do this. It's illegal. But what are you going to do? Do you have the money to go against a $44 billion company and fight this? No, you can't. I will say this. We finally, years ago, pre-COVID, we went to Senator Michiki and said, Senator Michiki, will you take this to the Attorney General? Because we believe this is unfair competition practices that are happening in Alaska. For a short while after that, we started getting a little bit of product, and then the next thing we know, again, we're right back to where we are today. I'm going to skip over some of this real quick. I know you guys, your time is valuable, and I apologize. There's so much. Permittees, what's in CSSB 146? Permit price cap increase from $2 million to $5 million. The bill that's before you previously has a separation for paper and e-tabs. That's self-serving to the paper companies. Why should you have to depend on one or the other? If it's a cap, it's a cap. Let them earn their money however they want. I personally don't like a price cap. It is what it is. I would rather you guys said, hey, this is the amount of money a nonprofit can raise. The price cap pushes nonprofits to offer lower price payouts. The reason for going to $5 million is with the e-tabs, we double the percentage, which means they're going to need to turn tickets twice as much to get the same amount of money. They will do that because customers like the games more. Removes a $500 cap if operator is used. A lot of nonprofits don't have the capability to do their own fundraising. Operators are invaluable in our state. They do a really good job. I've gotten so many calls recently, how do we get into gaming since they've seen Alaska Lotto and the success that they've had raising money for nonprofits. More people are wanting to get into that. Part of this bill is trying to make, how can we make it easier? My daughter's volleyball team, I don't know if you guys know, it's a school sport team. $45,000 is what it cost for a volleyball team last year to run that they had to raise. They were able to do it through gaming. Easy. I'd like to see, others say we don't want to expand gaming. I do. I want to see e-tablets in every bar, raising money for all these nonprofits. I want to see that. I want it to seem classy. Okay, so I do want to expand gaming. I want to make it easy, and that's part of this. Pooling of permits, we talked about, or you have heard testimony of that before. Right now, it's really hard. I want a bar to be able to, if you have 20 of your favorite nonprofits, they're selling games, and we divide that amount of proceeds by 20. Right now, they have to take one box of tickets and track it to a single nonprofit, and it's tedious, and it's just silly the way they do it. But that's the current regulations. In this proposal, the bars do not get to have cabinets. They're only allowed tablets. That keeps the permittees have something special. The pull tab stores that you see, the operators have something special. They can have the big cabinets. We're one of the only states that would allow both of these. Most states are picking one or the other. You either have cabinets or you have tablets. So this was a compromise that the operators had come up with. Hey, this will give us something special. The limit of ETAB devices, that doesn't make sense in Alaska. That comes from where they have casinos, and the casinos were afraid of being in competition with pull tabs. I can't imagine a bar with 200 seats only having five tablets. That doesn't make sense. There's no reason to limit it. Let industry limit it. Operators trying to get rid of a lot of their paperwork. We did find out there's one error in this that we need to add on it. It says right now if they combine permits, giving out 30%, and it forgets to mention that it needs to be 10% for bingo or other gaming activities. Operators have a lot of paperwork right now that's submitted that nobody looks at. I'm trying to make it a little bit easier for them also, that all they have to do is report income, what's paid out in prizes, and ensure that 30% of the profit is going to nonprofits. It should be a real simple math calculation. We way overcomplicate this. Some of the things that being a little bit careful, if an operator leases bar space, they may not have e-cabinets in the facility, only mobile devices. We don't want self-service centers. We do not want Diamond Center. You don't want to be able to go in there and they have electronic pull tabs and a payout kiosk that people can cash out themselves. So we have language in here. If you're an operator, you must have a physical person there that is dealing with the cash and handing the money back and forth. Money flow, this is talking about kickbacks. Money should flow one direction, period. You're buying a machine, leasing a machine from me, permittee pays me money, I'm leasing it from the manufacturer, they shouldn't have to pay me to use their product. This is number one thing coming out of the manufacturers from Pilot in Minnesota and North Dakota. Currently in North Dakota, they are giving $10,000 per device to the distributor, although the bars know that the distributor is getting this money per machine. So some of my operators would be looking at $1 million just to place the machines in their facilities. Now, the problem with that is there's no guarantee on what the rate will be that's charged to the nonprofit. So the operator can look and say, man, I just made $1 million. I don't care if the nonprofit's paying a higher per ticket rate, which is passed on to the permittee, the nonprofit. That's why we don't want kickbacks. You cannot compete with that. It's going to be a bait and switch. Let your device speak for itself. Manufacturers. This is, I think, as I talk with everybody in the state, this has to happen before they'll consider ETABs. Manufacturer, this is in Minnesota, it's in North Dakota. A manufacturer should not be a distributor. And it's not just Arrow. There's another one out there that I recently got a solicitation to sell their product. And when I go and look at their manufacturer license, they are inactive. The state has put them on hold as a manufacturer, and they're trying to do stuff through their distributor license. We have a saying, and you guys may have seen this in my writing. When I used to coach sports, it takes three to pee. The reason is to get three people to cheat is really hard. To get three people to lie is really hard. When you get two people, they can come up with some really screwy stuff really quick. I don't know how that distributor was selling product when their manufacturing license was shut off. I doubt anybody knows. Maybe they weren't doing anything wrong. Who knows? But the idea that you have this real straight line leads to a lot easier manipulation. Can't provide kickbacks again here. Things like changing the building, different things like that. Contracts have to be written so that way we know if there's a kickback. State Road doesn't have to do with anything with it, but they're going to hold on to the contract so that they know if something is funky. And again, we hear manufacturer may not obtain, use, share, or sell point-of-sale data from paper tickets or bingo. We're in an information age where we know information is really valuable. We need to protect that information. Hit on this one real quick on kickbacks. It's dangerous. It's really dangerous. There's a lot of money in this industry. Once you get them hooked, just like DirecTV, it's really easy to keep them there without them knowing. Vendors, again, able to pull permits. This becomes really easy for a bar. They sell the pull tabs. The distributor can set it up that money is pulled from their accounts, distributed to the permittees. There is a worry amongst the bar association, and I agree with them. We need to figure out, and this is part of what we hope to work on, how do we protect bars from mistakenly not depositing enough funds, and they end up in a hole? Do they need to have a bond or something like that to cover them in case they're not good money managers? Down south, they have to deposit the money every 3 days into a bank account. We know some of our locations aren't near a bank. We're going to have to deal with that. How does that work? ETABs in general, differences that you'll see, we're going to cap the payouts at 90%. You get higher than that, and all of a sudden the distributors do really well, and the nonprofits start not doing so well. Allow an auto-close feature. Players really like it. Minnesota, once the major prizes are out of a game, the game is pulled out. We knew that with electronics. We can't do that with paper. Payout kiosks are restricted to employee access only. Again, no self-serve facilities. The others, I hit on these already. Question that you guys had, it was on the house side. They want to know where the money goes. This is where the money goes. If you play an 80% game, the number on the left shows it as a paper ticket. The number on the right, using our company, with the ratios that we do, a 33% share. You can see at 80%, the nonprofit does better with the paper company. We can fully admit that. You play 80% games, use paper, don't use us. You just won't have as many customers because they don't win as much. We switch that to 90, and all of a sudden you're going to see that with ETABs, the customer does far better, the pull tab, the nonprofit. And as we kind of go through this, you'll see it's the same pattern. Lower percentages, the distributor, lower percentage go with paper. You just won't have as many customers playing. If you can keep your customers at the low percentages and it's working for you, stay with paper. Nobody's saying you have to go to ETABs. If you want more customers, you want that whole different audience, then you want to go with ETABs. And so we just go through here different applications, how it's split up, and the next steps. This is a good bill, but I don't think Alaskan nonprofits have been educated enough and understand it yet. We would like to see this adopted as a committee substitute. At the same time, we don't think it's ready to move out of the legislature, because I don't want to replace the feelings that people have right now towards Arrow, that this is one person that came in and said this is the way it should be done. We need to go around the state, help educate them. The numbers, what you're seeing in here, are right, but people need to understand what's happening and be part of it and give their input. I already had quite a bit of good input on this from a few people that have seen it that said, hey, we need to change this, we need to change that. We need to add on the 10% limit for bingo. There's a bunch of that. But what this does, if we're on a football field, we were at the 0-yard line going to the other end zone before. They're against it. They are dead set against it. This brings us probably to the 75-yard line, where most of the people can get on board. Everybody I talk to realizes ETAB's probably going to happen at some point. Just what's currently in front of you, the regular Senate bill, is not it. My hope is you guys will adopt this. Let us work on it over the summer. It's probably not your normal way of doing things, but it needs more work, and we want to be part of it. We'll have regional meetings over the summer trying to get people on board and come back to the next legislature and say, okay, now we're ready for gaming, and we have the vast majority of the industry on board. Not everybody will agree, but we hope the vast majority.
Thank you, Mr. Fisher. I have a question regarding how you split up these dollars. These percentages, are they reflective of the way things are under the status quo, or are they reflective of an iteration of this bill?
So the left side would be status quo because it's paper. The prices on there, we are not this high in our prices. We're a low cost company, but as I look around others, we will have to be here probably in about a year because the prices keep going up to 5.5 cents per ticket. So if somebody says, well, that's not a reasonable price, it's not for my company right now, but I would look at other companies' prices. That's not that far off. So the paper side is absolutely real. When we look at the electronics, well, that's theoretical, and that's assuming they go with our company where they know that it's 33% for a permittee and 31% for an operator. We've established we'll keep that rate for the next 5 years guaranteed. We're not going to go messing with anybody.
Thank you. Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm this debate reminds me a little bit about taxi cabs in Anchorage when I was on the assembly, where there was a very segmented industry where it was kind of complicated to understand who the players were. There were the drivers, there were the permit holders, there were the car holders, and the distribution companies. By the way, all of them hated each other, but hopefully that's not the case in your industry. But I am having difficulty sort of envisioning what your company does in an electronic pull tabs market. So the idea of distributing physical pull tabs, I understand, although you know, you could sell these directly to the retailers, but that's not how the industry is set up, right? So what does your company do with electronic pull tabs? Because you're not literally not distributing machines, right? Something else.
Well, actually, yeah, we are responsible for everything. The manufacturer ships me the machines.
Okay.
They develop the software. Other than that, that's on us. And I'll be honest, we could stay with paper. I'll stay with paper. I work about 2 hours a day. I ship stuff out, and that's it. We switched to electronics. I'm now tech support. Hmm. We're now on 24 hours a day versus the paper. Paper's easy. But, again, I know my customers can't last much longer solely on paper. So as a distributor, we're responsible. We are the boots on the ground for the manufacturer. Obviously, they foot the bill for the machines. They're the ones that have the money on the line. We're the labor.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I should say also to the good people in the taxi industry, not everybody hates each other. Some people I worked with did. But you use the term operator, but the way you're describing it, I mean, in some ways you are the operator. If you own the machine and you service the machine, you know, the retailer sets it out and other people play the game. But, you know, other than the physical location, it doesn't sound like they're doing much operation. It sounds like you are.
Well, I think as I hear what you're saying, it definitely changes the dynamic in a bar a lot. The bar owner now becomes far more in control. Because right now somebody has to take a paper box, literally one member out of a nonprofit has to deliver that box to you at the bar, and you have to pay him a check right then. This changes it to the bar owner can go out and say, you know what, I'll support your nonprofit, I'll support your nonprofit, and I'll support your nonprofit, 30% each. The machine's already going to be in his bar, and that's why the incentive to pay $10,000 to put a machine in your bar, because the bar owner is going to be in control of which nonprofits get to have access to that machine. He's not going to have five different machines based on different nonprofits. So it puts the bar owner in a bigger control. I don't think it's kind of like right now. I mean, we're basically a pass-through. Mm-hmm. I mean, I stock a whole lot of paper. One of the things that on here, I don't know when the state changed this. There's a last sale ticket we used to be able to put on a game that makes a game that has last sale, and somehow they change it that I can't put that sticker on, so I had to double my inventory because some people like that, some don't. So we have a huge amount of inventory right now. The difference becomes I now have inventory of electronics. We're running the east side of it, the servers, keeping them up and running, things like that. One of the big differences that we know is a lot of this has to be hosted in Alaska. There are other companies that did it more centralized, and they got hacked, and it shut them down for months because their whole thing was connected. They learned that lesson, I hope.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Do you have any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for your presentation. We've been dealing with this bill, as you know, and everybody else for quite some time now. Okay. And I really appreciate you suggesting that over the summer you do some work on this bill. And I would welcome it, frankly, because we've heard from folks who support it, and we've heard from folks who don't support it. And if you think that you can fix the bill so that everybody will be in agreement, that would be really helpful, I think. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I won't make the promise that everybody will agree, but I think a lot of it is based on misconception. Just like my dad thought you could just click through. Once you start, you actually see what it is. The reality hits. And it's not that people don't know. And what's amazing is, and I don't blame these people. I don't think the commissioner has a great idea of what gaming is all about because they don't see all the levels. Marty's a wonderful lady, but she's not out in the pull tab stores. She doesn't see that. We get to see a whole lot more of that, so we can bring a lot more of that element in and realize this is the bigger picture.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to take a brief at ease, and then we're going to keep going. Briefies.
back on the record at 2:41, we've been joined by Senator Merrick as well. We are discussing a CS to Senate Bill 146. Up next for invited testimony, we have Mr. Josh Lewis. Mr. Lewis, please put yourself on the record. Welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce.
Thank you, Senator Bjorkman. My name is Joshua Lewis, and I'm a concerned Alaska charitable gaming operator representing nonprofits with charitable gaming permits from Fairbanks, Wasilla, Palmer, Anchorage, Kenai, Soldotna, Homer, and Kodiak. The nonprofit corporations in Alaska strengthen communities by providing the educational, health, and social services which our communities need and the state government cannot fully provide. I've been involved in charitable gaming for the past two decades as a self-directed permittee, a multi-beneficiary permittee, and a charitable gaming operator. Thank you for the opportunity to testify regarding Senate Bill 146. First, I believe that the introduction of electronic poll tabs will have a significant and profoundly negative impact upon the industry. The Alaska charitable gaming industry is currently the poster child for charitable gaming nationally. Provisions for Alaska's nonprofits to earn charitable gaming revenue exist in several distinct ways. No other state has these alternatives provided to their nonprofits. The introduction of electronic pull tab machines is effectively the introduction of slot machines into the Alaska market. Electronic pull tab manufacturers take somewhere from 30 to 50% of the charity's profits when new machines are introduced, and this money goes out of the state. Electronic pull tab machines provide a 5% to 15% profit to the charity. Current pull tabs provide a 20 to 23% profit. Currently, a $5 purchase of pull tabs results in a dollar profit to the permittee or the nonprofit. A fourfold increase in volume or play is going to be required to realize the equivalent financial return from electronic pull tabs. Nearly all participants in Alaska charitable gaming will have a significant decrease in profits if electronic pull tab machines are introduced. The only participants that will see an increase in revenue are electronic pull tab manufacturers. In conclusion, I believe Senate Bill 146 is not a good option the way it's currently written for the state of Alaska. I'm happy to take any questions the committee members may have.
Are there any questions from members of the committee? Mr. Lewis, thank you for joining us today. I have a question. Have you had a chance to review the proposed committee substitute that has been made available for this meeting?
I have had a chance to look at that, and I still think that there are some of the sort of basic problems that I mentioned. In some way, shape, or form, we need to make sure that the dollars that are going out of the state of Alaska are stopped. I think that the dollar amount that the manufacturers are asking for, sometimes up toward 50%, it is just non-workable. And secondarily, the problem that I mentioned of currently, in order for a pull tab operation to work for a self-directed permittee situation or an operator, as I am, needs to provide a 20% return from the pull tab play or from the income. And with electronic pull tabs, the reality is if you check with the industry, it just doesn't work. I mean, it's as I mentioned, not unlike a slot machine, the player just loses interest if they're not getting 95%. So only 5% is then going to the permitting. And that's why, you know, we're going to have to either get four times as many players or the current players are going to have to spend four times as much in order to just break even or realize the income stream that we currently are giving to the nonprofits in the state.
Thank you for your testimony today. Up next, we have Mr. Steve Borscherding. Mr. Borscherding, welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce.
Thank you, sir.
Please state your name, affiliation, and hometown for the record, and begin your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Stephen Troy Borscherding, Sr. I am currently the operations manager of the Whaler Casino Supply. We are a licensed Alaskan pull tab distributor and have been so for 40 years. I personally have been 35 years experience in Alaska's charitable gaming industry as a distributor and as the general manager of Gold Cash Bingo and Gold Cash Tabs, Alaska's largest and most profitable 100% charity-owned and operated gaming operations. In addition to working in the industry, I've also had the opportunity to serve on multiple legislative committees and task forces and have appeared before several Senate and House committees as both an invited expert or to testify on behalf of charitable gaming in support of or against various legislation. I currently serve on several charitable organization boards as directors or officers, most of which are veteran or military charities, all of which have charitable gaming permits. I was invited here today specifically to speak about the question of what happens to a $1 pull tab, and that's why I was brought here. I have seen the CS. I wasn't prepared to speak on it, although I have a lot of opinions on it myself as well. So I do follow along closely with what the previous speaker did speak of here, and I am using also 85% as the prize payout. And what I'd like to show you is what happens to a dollar on the most basic form of how the dollar works. And if you look up here, if you purchase a paper pull tab for $1 and you do 85% payout to the players, you will have 15 cents left over. That 15 cents is what we call ideal net in this industry. That 15 cents does not change. Out of that 15 cents, it is guaranteed in statutes and regulations that the permittee, the charity, the qualified organization, the people that we're in this industry for, have to get 30% of that, not one third, but 30% of that 15 cents. Regardless of anything else in here, 30% of that 15 has to go to charity. So whether it's an e-tab, paper tab, or anything of that nature, 30% of the ideal net. Taxes to the state are also included in here because they are to every single person that runs in this game, whether they are an operator, whether they're self-directed, or an MVP, or the vendors don't count on this, but the taxes to the state is 0.45 cents. So you have 14.55 cents left on every dollar. And if you look up there, it's the same, no matter if it's paper or e-tabs. Now, at this particular area, the person before me used 5.5 cents as the cost per ticket. I find as a distributor that 3.5 cents is probably more in that range. Now, having said that, that doesn't mean that there's not better deals out there. The people who buy in bulk might get a better price. It also means that places like when we have to ship out of Anchorage, as an example, and ship to places that are far north or off the grid, the cost of everything has gone up. And freight is one of them, 60% since COVID. So prices vary based on that. So the price per ticket is not a set amount. Certain people, if you're right next door to my location, you're probably going to get a cheaper price than I've had to send it all the way up north somewhere. But as that example, we're using 3.5% or 3.5 cents. That's probably a little bit low on a cost per ticket. I think I agree more with the previous person that we're heading to the five real quickly. And a lot of places in the state probably do pay 5 to 7 cents per ticket because of where they're located. Additionally, just to make it clear, there is a value to entertainment in this industry. If you have a paper pull tab and I open it and I see a $200 winner, I know what I won. It took me 1 second to do that. There are other forms of gaming that are part of part of pull tabs, including what we've talked about, pick boards here or coin boards. It is another opportunity for another level of entertainment, something a little more fun. You open a ticket and instead of saying you won $200, it says you get to go to this board up here and you get to pick a coin off that board. And behind that coin, there might be more money. So it adds this extra value to this extra fun level of excitement. Those games, because there's more involved in them, because they come with coins and things like that, they cost a little bit more money. There's an entertainment value that goes with those games. So when you're looking at 3.5 cents per ticket on a game like that, it might be 5, 6, 7 cents, as the previous person was discussing. Ultimately, when it's all said and done at 3.5 cents, if you look at the adjusted gross net, and basically just saying, all things being equal, I sold a dollar ticket, here's what the cost, or sold a $1 face value ticket, here's what the cost per ticket is. The difference between the two, whether it's electronics or paper, is less than one penny. So when I hear all these things about you have to do 4 or 5 times as much and so on and so forth, when it comes to the cost of the game and what's going out, in this particular scenario at 85%, yes. If you do 80%, which is the magic number on pull tabs, then 80%, yes, you might make it might cost a little bit more per play, but it certainly isn't 50 and 60% and some of the weird things that I've heard over the past year or so when we talk about these things. The other part of this that seems to get forgotten is electronic pull tabs is not meant to replace paper in any way, shape, or form. Electronic pull tabs would just be another endorsement for a charity. And the charities have choices here. The charities can choose whether they want to run an 80% profit paper ticket, 90% profit paper ticket, or whatever. Even electronics, there's choices. You don't have to run at 90%. You don't have to run at this. The magic number, as I say, for the state, if you look at the state's Department of Revenue, 80% seems to be the magic number across the board. Some locations, some areas, it's 85 or 90. Some locations, 75 works better. But overall, it's 80%. In electronics, it's 85 to 90%. So having said that, when you look at the electronics as well, you have options and choices. One thing I said earlier is there's this entertainment value that you get when you're looking at 3.5 cents per ticket. I'm looking at a machine right now that has bells and whistles and all kinds of fun stuff and bonuses, and we've all played slot machines or something at that point. And yes, there's an entertainment value there. And for that entertainment value, I'm paying a little bit more on a per ticket cost, in this case, per dollar, 4.3 cents instead of 3.5. But I get this really cool value with it that goes with it. Those are some of the main things we're hitting on. I was here to go through that on the dollar part. One last thing, at least on the dollar part, is one thing we're missing too, is because we have pull tabs and because we can have electronics now, we can have that separate endorsement. I ran a bingo hall for 21 years. We had a bingo endorsement. We had a pull tab endorsement. We had a raffle endorsement. All of those things make different margins. All those things have different labor and everything else. So to specifically say, oh, this is evil because it doesn't make quite as much as a pull tab does, it's not fair. This is an opportunity to have another form of gaming to help the charities make money. Yes, admittedly, it might make a little bit less per dollar than, say, a pull tab does, but it's another opportunity for a different group of people to maybe play. One of the things we found in the lower 48 is a lot of fraternal clubs are getting new members. There's things like that that are helping out along with this. There's an entertainment value. And one thing, too, that you don't see in here that I really want to discuss is that when you get to the final number, when you have your final adjusted gross net or whatever it might be, if you can keep a pull tab store like I had pull tab stores, I would keep my pull tab store the same. I'd still have one dealer. I'd still have a bunch of pull tabs sitting there, and I'd stick 3 or 4 of these machines in one of the corners. There's no additional costs at all. The labor doesn't necessarily go up. There's no additional cost for the overhead especially. You still have a location. You still have insurance. You still have all those things. But now you have another chance to make money for your charity. This idea that all the money is going out of state is also kind of an interesting thing, because most of these pool tabs, matter of fact, every single one of them that you see was created somewhere out of state. Arrow happens to be one of them. Arrow is 90% of their business is still paper pull tabs. Founded by a World War II veteran, that is still their business. They make paper pull tabs. They make paper bingo and everything else. I'm not here to defend Arrow or anything in that sense. Everybody knows I work for the Whaler. Arrow owns the Whaler. But my prices are not 6 cents yet or anything like that. So there hasn't been any gouging. There hasn't been any of that. We're here to say that. But you put in electronic pull tabs, it doesn't cost you any more. Arrow, at least what I'm showing, and what I'm showing you here is at 30%. Arrow's asking for 30%, not 60, not 50, not like everything that says there. Arrow doesn't mind doing contracts to protect the charities. If they want to do a three-year contract to make sure that it stays at 30% for 3 years, that's a great idea. I don't know why that wouldn't be a good idea. If I'm leasing a building or anything like that and start to make money, the last thing I want is the landlord to go, oh, I'm changing your rent because we're only going month to month. So there's things in that bill that I don't disagree with that were talked about earlier here, but have to do with what it costs on a dollar ticket every time it's played. And with that, I ask if there's any questions of this board. I can't go into everything in the CS. I would love to, but that's not what I was here for. I was here to kind of break down what happens to a dollar.
Thank you, Mr. Borkerding.
You're welcome.
Appreciate that. Are there any questions from committee members? Well, sir, at some point in time in the near future, I would appreciate your feedback and your comment on the proposed CS as we work to make our statutes regarding pull tabs, whether they be paper or electronic, fit the actual business that's out there.
I would certainly love to help with that, definitely. Excellent.
I have one question. As you have yourself identified that there's significant upward pressure on per ticket price because of the cost of paper, could you briefly identify, because that paper cost is rising, and you mentioned that the number you have here, 3.5 cents, is a little bit low, and it's likely going quickly toward the 5-6 cent range. What does that mean for nonprofits? How much money is available to them because the cost of paper is increasing?
Well, if you do it on a percentage and you change these on that, it's going to decrease. There's one of two things can happen. You can say, well, and I've heard this before when I've testified, is that why don't they just simply run a higher profit games? One of the things that was said before, too, is that winners come back. The magic number is 80 cents per or 80%. That's it. So every time the ticket price goes up, that 20% that's left over gets eaten up a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. Where I can say, at least on electronics, that shouldn't happen. There's no – the electronic is simply sending a signal to a machine to tell the machine that game is loaded. So there is no paper increases. There's none of that in the future. How does it affect them? A game that used to cost, say, $100 is now, with the increases we've had over the past 3 years, $150 for the same game. So it's $50 less that they're making on that particular game. Plus – and it doesn't just stop there, because we know everything. Labor's gone up. Everything's gone up. Inflation. And a dollar pull tab is always a dollar pull tab, no matter what you do with it.
Thank you. Yeah, I guess that's what I'm hearing, is either nonprofits are faced with less profit from paper because of the cost of paper, or as a system as a whole, we need to increase the overall ticket cost to make it so that a nonprofit can still raise money by selling paper pull tabs. Is that correct?
It's the law of diminishing returns. At some point, the break-even point just doesn't match anymore. And you're hearing a lot of testimony from operators and things and people who take a percentage. So if you're a self-directed charity, you get to use – you take all of that money and you use it. The word operator, by the way, is a legal term in Alaska. It doesn't just mean anybody who sells pull tabs. So when you're talking operator, it's different from a full-blown charity. An operator, and I agree, there's a great place in this state for operators, but they get a percentage of the take for running for permits that can't otherwise do it themselves. And I have no problems with that. And it, as this gets a little bit deeper and as the price goes up, operators are getting squeezed out because, again, those things don't change.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Up next, we have Mr. Dave Lambert. Mr. Lambert, please put yourself on the record and begin your presentation.
Yeah, my name is Abe Lambert. I've been involved with the charitable gaming industry in Alaska for over 30 years. I've been a licensed charitable gaming operator for 25 years of that. I'm testifying today to protect the interests of approximately 100 nonprofits that are contracting me to operate charitable gaming on their behalf. These organizations are not set up to run charitable gaming. Alaska has one of the best systems in the world to give the opportunity to raise funds for nonprofit. When I got into the industry, a dollar pull tab was a dollar. That was 30 years ago. A dollar pull tab is still a dollar. And with an operator, the permittee is guaranteed 30%, so the increases do not affect them. The current legislation, or Senate Bill 146, the way it's written, it would not benefit the nonprofits. For years, I've testified to protect the nonprofits. It was written by an outside manufacturer to benefit them. It does not benefit the nonprofits. It is definitely a labor and commerce issue because it is written to help them form a monopoly. We've been dealing with them for 3 years. For 3 years, they were telling us that it was 50% that they would take. 50%. Well, when they testified on the House side, they said, oh, it's only going to be 35% now. And then today we hear 30%. When they put their machines into a vendor location, where vendor location is a bar, they have no choice but to go with that organization. And the bar doesn't care what the poll tabs cost because they get a fixed profit and they can charge whatever they want. A few months ago, we were in Vegas and we met with them. They said that they were going to work with the distributors and the people in Alaska, that they would never come in and be a distributor or an operator. Well, we voiced that as a concern. So what did they do? A week later, they had a distributor license. They didn't sell anything, but they had a license. A few weeks later, they bought the Whaler. Now, they own most of the manufacturers of paper pull tabs. So once they get their foot in the door, why would they sell them to anybody else? They won't. The Senate bill, the original one, needs to go. The substitute is something that I recommend that you guys support, but there is still a lot of issues with it. There's language in there that needs to be changed. I could go line by line, but there's just procedure that isn't the industry standard in what it's done now that needs to be corrected. There's percentages, but it would be a good starting point. And it needs to be the nonprofits and the organizations that spend the summer and put together a proposal that's going to work for Alaska nonprofits. There was a question earlier why the limits have to be increased. Well, the limits were created back in, early 80s, when $500 was still a lot of money. It's not anymore. And if you're going to do electronic pull tabs, the payout's a lot higher. So to make the same money, you're going to have to do quite a bit more. I have a concern on the new proposal that raising it to $5 million, it's going to squeeze out a lot of the nonprofits. It happened quite a few years ago when the prize limits went up from $500,000 to $1,000. Well, they went up for a permittee from $1 million to $2 million because an organization that would go over their limit every year wanted to buy a fire truck, and it sounded like a good thing to do. And it does sound like a good thing to do, but because of the limits going up, a lot of the other nonprofits that got a turn at charitable gaming when somebody else maxed out, all of a sudden lost their turn. And if you were the golden child, then you benefit from the increase. But I think my recommendation would be to adopt the substitute, and with it knowing that there's going to have to be a lot of changes, there's language changes in it and amendments to it, and not pass it out of committee and let the people work on it over the summer. Most of the nonprofits don't even know anything's going on. So I'm available for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Lambert. Are there questions from members of the committee? Thank you, Mr. Lambert, for those comments. We appreciate that very much. That concludes our invited testimony for today. My intention is to take public testimony and then set this bill aside, and then we have one other bill to hear. So we'll try to move through that as fast as possible. If committee members have conflicts and need to go, that is okay. Okay? At this time, we will open public testimony on Senate Bill 146. Is there anyone in the room who is wishing to testify? Is there anyone online? Charles Boring.
Yes. thank you for some really good testimony. I've actually been here since before the thing started. My name is Charles Boring. I'm an Anchorage resident since the late 70s, and I'm a retired veteran and American Legion member for 35 years. I am keenly aware of how important charitable gaming is, having been post commander of our post for 7 times. And nonprofits obviously are getting squeezed all around. There were some great points made, and I believe that increased limits will still help nonprofits that are all trying to survive. Electronic gaming is better controlled, or should be better controlled. There may be some fallout, obviously, with staffing and all that. I fully support the passage of SB 146, which allows legal and monitored electronic gaming, and the devil's in the details, but I still believe it's a good thing for the nonprofits, because I believe there'll be more money made because of it. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, Krista Foley. Please state your name and location for the record. You have 2 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and honorary committee members. My name is Krista Foley. I am from Anchorage, Alaska. I'm also a veteran. I belong to the American Legion, the VFW, Eagles Club. And currently, I am the department commander for the American Veterans and Vets Club. Our clubs, 100%, are behind this bill. I've heard a lot of testimony for some really good things. I understand the concern. But I believe that this bill is going to help our club do more for our veterans in the future. I don't think it's any different than the Alaska Lottery that we're doing right now. It's electronic. It's no different than the bingos that went from paper to electronic, and they're doing both. I do not believe that the electronic gaming is going to take away from our paper pull tabs. We're allowed a certain amount of machines. Trust me, there are times when there are more than that many folks in that want to play paper and pull tab or do the electronic. And I think it would be very beneficial. Keep folks here that want to do it, can't afford to go to Vegas. I believe in the entertainment value of it. I like the bells and whistles. I mean, I'm going to be honest. It's more entertaining for me than just sitting there pulling paper pull tabs, but I know people that love to do that. At the end of the statement, what I really want to put forward is that I believe that our nonprofit, our veteran club, in the end, we'll have more money to get to our veterans. I've talked with multiple other department commanders that are already doing electronic pull tabs, and they have done nothing but sing the praises of how much more they're able to give to their charity because of this. Guys, it's the way of the future. Everything we do is going electronic. We're going away from paper, but we'll still have it. I still like picking up a book and reading a book where I can turn the pages. But I also don't mind reading a book on my phone or my computer. I think that electronic pull tabs it's coming. It's inevitable. And I really do hope that you support SB 146. I'll take any questions if you have any. Thank you for allowing me to speak today.
Thank you for your testimony, ma'am. Up next, we have Jerry Lewis. Mr. Lewis, please state your name, location for the record, and begin your testimony. You have 2 minutes.
Thank you. My name is Jerry Lewis. I'm an operator in Anchorage. Been in gaming all of my life, from Nevada to Colorado, and now in Alaska. I've run several casinos, worked for a slot machine manufacturer, operated a distributor here in Alaska, and now I've got a bingo hall and 4 pull tab stores. Been intimately involved with the expansion of gaming in other states, and have always, I guess, incurred unforeseen consequences. In my experience, I've never seen charitable gaming run as well as it does in Alaska, and I can't fathom why we want to change that or mess it up. I have read the substitute. It appears to me that operators will be the ones to suffer the most. Operators represent the largest piece of charitable gaming pie, representing over 250 permittees. You know, you don't want to beat around the bush. The E-tabs, as they're called, are a slot machine. They play like a slot machine. A pull tab is described as a paper slot machine, so now it's just an electronic slot machine. Every other state that has recently adopted E-tabs has been trying to rein in their unforeseen issues. Neither the bill nor the substitute regulates what a manufacturer can charge for the games, even though I've heard it touted a lot out there. We currently pay about 20% for a game with the E-tab numbers. You guys have heard it. They're quoting somewhere between 35 and 50%. And the bill also doesn't regulate the number of games that a permittee or an MVP can have. It regulates the number of games that an operator can have, but it doesn't regulate the others. Given the addictive nature of a slot machine and alcohol, I'd recommend that they be severely limited. The bill and the substitute want to raise the price limitation for permittees. I think that should be addressed, but it's a slippery slope. Raising the cap, in my case, from $500,000 to $5 million would mean that a whole lot fewer charities would be played. Obviously, you guys can do the math. I would have to do 10 times as much in sales to run the same number of permittees. The bill and the substitute address not using spinning reels to mimic a slot machine. Slot machines haven't used spinning reels in 20 years. That needs to be taken out. That's just silly. I guess in closing, I do agree that someday electronics will come to Alaska. I would be happy to work on a workable draft. I don't know that we can get there, but I appreciate you guys allowing me the chance to testify, and if I have any questions, I'll be happy to take.
Thank you, Mr. Lewis. Let's see, any questions. Up next, Don Mitchell. Don, please state your name and location for the record. Begin your testimony. You have 2 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Don Mitchell. I'm an attorney in Anchorage. And I don't mean to add to the convolution of the subject matter, and I express no view as to whether the committee should or should not report any incarnation of SB 146, but I wanted to bring to your attention the implications of the Indian gaming issue. As you may or may not know, in 1988, Congress passed the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act, which allows a group that qualifies as a, quote, Indian tribe, close quote, to engage in gaming of various categories on the tribe's, quote, Indian lands, close quote. It has always been my view that there are no Indian tribes or Indian lands in Alaska that qualify for reasons that I won't bore you with. But it does not make any difference what I think, because in 1995, the Knowles administration rolled over and allowed the precedent to be established that every Native village in Alaska does qualify as a, quote, Indian tribe, close quote, and that there are certain locations that are Indian lands. The two places so far are Klawak and Metlakatla. In my view, neither of those qualify as Indian lands, but as I said, it doesn't make any difference what I think. The most recently, the native village of Aklutna has tried three times since 1995 to get an approval from the Interior Department that an allotment in Birchwood qualifies as Indian lands. And I think they probably will be trying that for a fourth time relatively soon. Now, what are the implications for pull tabs? Pull tabs in the Indian Gaming Act are specifically mentioned as a Class 2 game, which means that an Indian tribe that qualifies, that opens a gaming facility, can have pull tabs without any supervision regulatorily from the state. So, for example, you have a $2 million limit in the original bill, yearly limit. You have limitations on the number of machines. An Indian tribe operating under the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act would not have to abide by any of those requirements. And, for example, to stick with...
Mr. Mitchell, I need you to conclude your testimony, please.
Yes, to stick with Aklutna, they could have 100 machines. So I have... my only message is that if you are interested in the subject matter, you might not take my word for any of this, but you might ask the Department of Law to give you a briefing.
Thank you for your about testimony, the... sir. Up next, Sandy Powers.
Hi, my name is Sandy Powers. I'm an operator of Big Valley Bingo in Wasilla. I have about 25 permits that I run in my establishment. And I'm a little bit, I have read the CS, but at this time I'm uncertain of the consequences of all of that. I'm inclined to agree with Jerry Lewis and Josh Lewis, who are not related Lewises, but and I'm also very concerned about the social ills. The states that have electronic pull tabs are ranked in the top 20th for gambling addiction. Alaska's currently ranked 47th. And with these slot machine type e-tabs, I'm concerned for the citizenry of Alaska becoming more addicted to them. I think there has to be a lot more oversight on that. I have been participating with the CS, but I agree with Jerry Lewis. We're far from something that would be really workable in my point of view. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony, ma'am. Up next is Tim Navarre.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and rest of the committee. My name is Tim Navarre. I'm not personally involved with gaming, but I have been, and I currently still am, by being my association with the Eagles Club in Alaska primarily. I listened to the one at your hearing last month, and or this month, I guess it was earlier, and also today, and listened to the testimony. I am in favor of what I'm hearing of moving the substitute, but then do nothing and let everybody get involved in it, that really, especially the nonprofits. I did some more thinking on this, and one of the reasons you should wait and look at it is it, electronic pull tabs might be another option out there, as some people have said, but it really is. What's going to change in the future is probably go away from paper at some point. There's just no question. How we can keep it the cost down and make nonprofits not get hurt, but also those that are playing the pull tabs, there's a number of reasons why they're paying it for entertainment. Some think they're going to make money on it, but they all lose in the end. And they give to nonprofits in the state, and that's a benefit. But let's not raise the cost on them. because to give the same amount that they do today, if it's everything went to electronic and paper went away, they would have to play more to give the same amount that would end up in the pockets of the nonprofit. That's like a tax increase to the Alaskans playing the Popes. I wouldn't be so worried if it was all tourism marketing funding, but it's not. With that said, I like what I heard today, and I hope the committee can move the substitute and put it on hold and let us all get involved. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Up next is Harlow Robinson.
Thank you, Chair Bjorkman and committee members. Again, my name is Harlow Robinson. I'm the executive director of a nonprofit here in Anchorage, the Alaska Sports Hall of Fame. And just to provide the perspective of a nonprofit that benefits from and has benefited from charitable gaming for over a decade now, I've heard a lot of really good points brought up today, both in favor and opposed. And I think I agree with what a lot of people said about the fact that our state really does do this right in with our charitable gaming system. And we all know about the ills, the societal ills of gambling and legalized gambling. And I, you know, I'm just genuinely concerned about the potential kind of expansion of gambling with the electronic pool tabs. And, you know, what I will say about my experience getting to know the charitable gaming world is that the bingo halls in general just provide a safe environment. There's no alcohol. These places are often serve as a community gathering place for people that are coming from across Alaska. I've heard other people talk about how it's a slow gaming style. I do believe the electronic pull tabs are a more addictive form. And I mean, Alaska has all kinds of societal ills right now, and I just don't see why we need to compound that or add to that in any way. And I've heard that this could be good for nonprofits. I'm skeptical about that. I'm also concerned about operators. I'm concerned about money leaving the state. I just, you know, if something's not broken, why fix it? And I do think we all are heading towards an electronic world where paper in general is fading away, but that doesn't mean that we need to, you know, move quickly to adopt electronic pull tabs. So thank you for my time. And if you have any questions, I'll stick around.
Thank you, Mr. Robinson. Appreciate your testimony. Up next is Carrie Crook. Ms. Crook, please state your name and location for the record. Begin your testimony. You have 2 minutes.
Yes. Hi. I am actually at work right now, so I will even take the 2 minutes. My name is Carrie Crook. I am a member and a bartender at the American Legion, Post 29 on Muldoon Road in Anchorage, Alaska. We do use the gaming money to help support our community here. That's not just members of our club, but other military-minded military in that family. It supports the schools, the vets, their families. If we introduce this electronic pull tabs, we can generate more for our posts, those same people I just mentioned. Our bartenders benefit, the pull tab dealers benefit, the charities across the state. I mean, it's going to be generating the extra income is going to give us the freedom to do more and say yes more when we have people that are in need of help, because we are a nonprofit club. So I like the concept. I've been hearing people talking about it being the paperless. I know we're doing a lot of the electronic stuff to get rid of papers. That concept, actually, I feel is a benefit if we can eliminate having to recycle or, you know, collect things to do that. I don't know, I've got people coming to my club right now. So I'm just going to say I'm for it. I think it would help our community to generate more money coming in. And I see nothing but positives in the future if we can get this going.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Is there anyone else online wishing to testify? Anyone else in the room? Seeing and hearing none, I'll close public testimony on Senate Bill 146 and bring the bill back before the committee. Are there any further questions for the department or any of our invited testifiers today? Seeing none, I'll remove my objection. Are there any further objections? Seeing and hearing none, committee substitute for Senate Bill 146 version /S is adopted as a working document. Is there any committee discussion? Thankful that so many folks came out and participated in today's hearing, both in person and online. Thank you very much. I would love to talk to all folks further if you guys have ideas or concepts to improve this bill and improve things for our nonprofits in Alaska. Thank you again for being here today. With that, I will set an amendment deadline for Senate Bill 146 for Friday, April 26th at noon. We'll set this bill aside. We'll take a brief at ease while we set up for the next bill. Back on the record, 3:30 here in Senate Labor and Commerce. Up next, we have Bill 253 from the Honorable Representative Stanley Wright. Representative Wright and trustee staff, please join us at the table. Welcome to Senate Labor and Commerce. Begin your presentation of the bill.
For the record, Representative Stanley Wright of District 22. Chair Bjorkman, members of the committee, I thank you for your time and your indulgence for the second time on this piece of legislation. House Bill 253 adds a small section to Alaska's statutes, which allows for but does not mandate the transition away from hydrofluorocarbons. This legislation simply ensures that building codes in Alaska cannot stop the use of an approved EPA HFC alternative if the equipment needed is installed properly and complies with the necessary safety standards. There is a nationwide effort to transition from HFCs to less pollutant alternatives, and the HVAC and construction industries are beginning to gain significant momentum. And House Bill 253 will ensure that Alaska is able to adopt these new technologies as they become available and ready for the market. And with that, I'll pass things over to my legislative staff.
All right. Through the chair, for the record, this is Joseph I. Mason, staff to Representative Stanley Wright. We would like to thank you for hearing House Bill again, or House Bill 253 again. House Bill 253 ensures the heating, ventilation, and air conditioning, or HVAC, and construction industries in Alaska can transition to the use of newer refrigerants and technologies, which are less pollutant than the currently used hydrofluorocarbons. HB 253 is necessary so that Alaska may participate in the larger federal push to transition away from HFC-containing refrigerants, which has initiated as part of American Innovation and Manufacturing Act signed into law in December 2020. I want to point out that HB 253 does not contain any mandate. It only allows Alaska to move forward with this transition by ensuring that our building codes cannot prevent the use of an HFC alternative, if all safety and installation standards are met. On the national level, making the transition away from HFCs will contribute to creating an estimated 33,000 jobs, as well as continuing support of over 138,000 current jobs.
Thank you, Mr. Brees. Are there any questions? Representative Wright.
Mr. Chair, through the chair, thank you for the opportunity. I just wanted to explain this is the same piece of legislation we heard last year. It's functionally the same, just worded a little different. We work with Legislegal just to fix it so we could run this piece of legislation again.
Very good. Thank you, sir.
And we do have an invited testimony on the line as well.
Most
Christopher Brees.
Oh, very good. We'll go now to our invited testifier.
Good afternoon, Chair and members of the committee. Thank you so much for the time to convey our strong support for HB 253. My name is Chris Brzee. I'm with the Air Conditioning and Refrigeration Institute. We represent about 330 manufacturers of HVAC and water heating equipment, representing about 90% of the North American market. I would just like to echo our strong support for the bill and echo the comments from Representative Wright. And I am available for any questions from the committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Appreciate you being here with us today. Are there any questions? Seeing and hearing none, set this bill aside for further consideration and look forward to seeing you all again. The Senate Labor and Commerce Committee will meet again on Wednesday, April 24th, when we will hear three bills: Senate Bill 235, CNA Training; House Bill 97, Self-Storage Units, Liens, Sales; and House Bill 29, Insurance Discrimination. As there's no further business come before the committee, this meeting is adjourned at 3:35 p.m.